Today's Shi'ez Masech Debavi Basra, Daf Kuf Lamed Vav. We will begin by Ezer Hashem's Baruch on Daf Kuf Lamed Vav Amid Aleph at the Mishnah towards the top of Amid. Says the Mishnah Kosev, the Chos of Lubanov, if somebody is writing over his estate, he's writing over his assets to his children, Tzarech Sheyichtav, he has to include the statement, Mayom Lachamisa, that the sale begins from today and continues la chamisa, because if you won't write it this way, as we've discussed in our previous shiur, what it will mean is that you only want the sale to be effective, you only want this transfer to be effective after the person passes away. And as we've discussed, a gift cannot be effective after the person who's giving the gift, after the person who's giving the gift is no longer here. And in order to avoid that problem, the way you prevent that problem is by writing Mahayoyim Lachamisa. And the Rishvam explains, the Mishnah here is speaking about a person who's a healthy person, and what he's trying to do is he's trying to cover up assets. What he's trying to accomplish is that we know that all of the assets that a person has are meshubed, are mortgaged to his wife for a ksuba and for her support. He doesn't want to have that. He wants his sons, his children, to have access to those assets. So the way he does this is by giving it away as a gift. But the problem with giving a gift, on the other hand, explained the Rishonim, is that he, if he really gives it away as a gift, has no longer access to those assets. And those are the assets from which he's living, from which he's collecting rent, from which he's eating payers. So what he's trying to accomplish is that it should be an effective gift, but as much as he wants it should be an effective gift, it should only be a gift that's really completely and become valid only after his passing. But again, he has another challenge, as we just explained. A gift cannot be valid lachamisa. So what he's trying to cover is that the gift should be a valid gift to his children, that he should have access to those assets as long as he's still alive, and that upon death, those assets should automatically be transferred to his children and not be mortgaged to his wife. Furthermore, explained the Rishonim, that everything that we just discussed is only referring to Matana Spari. It's talking about a person who is healthy. But a person who is a Shchimera, to then, Divrei Shchimera, besides that the special halacha that we learned, Divrei Shchimera Kiksubim Surum Dami, that a gift given by a Shchimera doesn't need to have a kinyan, as we often discuss in our shurim, there's another halacha. The gift of a shchimera can be effective after death. And since the gift of a shchimera can be effective after death, there is no reason for him to have to come up with this type of solution. It's only because he's a bari and he wants to give a gift, and we don't have that special halacha by the gift given by a bari, because a bari can't give a gift after his death as the different reasons that we explained, either because then dead people are not able to make gifts, or because at the moment of death, he is no longer the owner of those assets. And since at the moment of death, he's no longer the owner of those assets, they're not his assets that he can give away. And since those assets are not assets that he is able to give away, he has to be careful that the gift should be effective before he passes away. So continues the Mishnah in this, telling us, so somebody writes the gift for his children that it should be effective for after death. So what is the status of these assets until he passes away? Have any yochel limchor? The father can't sell those assets anymore. They've been written over to the son already. have any yachalim kar, abet any yachalim kar, and the son can't sell off those assets because mnei shehem b'shusav, they still, as far as the payers are concerned, belong to the father. And therefore, neither of them, and we'll speak about this much more in the Gemara, have really the right to sell off the assets. But what happens, says the Gemara, v'macharav, if the father did sell, so as the Rashbam explains, the father sold off the assets, he did not disclose that these assets are, that he only owns Paris in these assets, he doesn't own the actual asset anymore, but explains the Rashbam, since all that he owns in this asset are the Paris, so the Mishnah says, since he is the truthful owner of those Paris, the sale of the Paris is valid. But explains the Ritva, that let's say the buyer of these assets is now going to say, well, I wasn't aware that your ownership of these assets was limited to the Paris. I thought that you were selling an asset that belonged completely to you. So says the Ritva, if that would be the situation, then he could claim, the buyer could claim mekachtos. He could say, I legitimately assumed that you owned the asset entirely. And now that I've discovered that you do not own the asset entirely, then that's not what I wanted to buy, and that the sale would be null and void. If, however, he knew that the father's ownership of the asset is limited to just Paris, then he can't say mekachtos. And certainly, in a situation where the father was very clear and told him that all I own in this asset is just Paris, then the buyer can now not claim mekachtos. So says Machar Av, Mechurim, so if the father sold off those assets, the buyer has right to eat the Paris of those assets at Shiyomus until the father passes away. But after he passes away, the halacha is that the son becomes the owner not just of the asset, but of the Paris as well. And if he's not alive, then his Yorshim become the owner of those Paris. And then they could say to the buyer that you have no right anymore to eat from those Paris. On the other hand, Machra Ben, if the son sold this asset, the buyer has no right to his assets at Shams Av until the father dies, because until he dies, the son doesn't really have any ownership. We're learning in our Gemara a situation where somebody is trying to cover up assets. And the reason he's doing so is because he's trying to avoid a problem after he passes away, that there might be a room for dispute between his children and his wife. And the question is, if a father is concerned that this is going to happen, as we've learned, the halacha is that one should distribute the Yerusha properly. What is the halacha where the father is trying to avoid any machlokes? Is the halacha still that the father should do what the Torah says as far as Hilchos Yerusha is concerned? Or is the halacha that there, maybe the father should redistribute his estate in order to avoid machlokes? So the Chashuk Echemet quotes a Gemara Masechet Bava Metzia, that's Ein Heim and Beis. Tana Rabbana Shloisha Tzayakim Vein and Enim. The three that cry out and are not answered. Veil Heim, Mishi Yesh Lemas, somebody who lends money without proper edus. And Rashi explains what does the Gemara means, that when they go to Besdin, they don't have recourse in Besdin for what they have done. They've caused themselves their own problem. So what we're learning in that from that Gemara, explains the Chashuk Echemet, that if a father writes his assets, as we just learned, in this way, then the halacha is that if the son will sell, he can end up being in a very difficult place. And therefore, he says, a person has to consider the situation and making that decision. On the other hand, he quotes Paiskim that say that even though, as we're learning, a daughter is not entitled to Yerusha, but if a father gave daughter Yerusha because he wanted her to be able to marry a Talmud Chacham, then maybe it is appropriate. So he says that he once heard, the Chashuk Echemen holds, that a father, in order to avoid types of problems that we could understand, went and divided up all of his assets while he was still alive. The children, obviously not acting as they should, what they did was, now they didn't show respect to the father anymore, because their thinking was that whatever the father has, we already are getting. So now, he was concerned about his children's behavior. So somebody recommended him, what he should do is, he should buy a safe. And everybody, and he should put into the safe stones. And not, of course, share the combination with any of his children. His children will then be under the impression that the father still has a lot of assets to distribute. And of course, they want everybody to be on his good, they all want to be on his good side to be able to get from those assets. And then the father passes away and they see it as just stones. So what we learn from that, he says, is that everybody has to think, and they have to think and realize and recognize what is the appropriate approach to take given the situation. Says the Gemara. So what our Mishnah recommended is that the way the shtar should be written is mehayoyim lachamisa. Ask the Gemara, v'chikasa mehayoyim lachamisa mehavi, why would that help any? But Tanan, we learned in Masech Gittin, where again, the Gemara over there focuses heavily on the concept of ain get lachamisa, get is not val lachamisa. So the Mishnah wrote there, if somebody writes a get saying, hareini megarsheich, the loch is get for any get. We're not quite certain how to interpret what was meant here. Was it meant that the get should be effective from today when he's very much alive? Then it's a valid get. Or did he mean that the get should only be effective after he passes away? If he meant that the get should only be effective after he passes away, and get lachamisa. And therefore, this woman, if the husband dies without children, she doesn't have Yibum because maybe she's a divorcee and there's no din of Yibum. It's an Isser of Yibum because she's a sister-in-law. On the other hand, maybe she isn't divorced and she is Chayv in Yibum, so that's why we do Chalitza. So what do we see? That we're not quite certain how to interpret the statement by Yom Lachamisa. Why in our Mishnah is it interpreted as a statement that's effective? Answers the Gemara. Hasam Sapkalon. There, we're not quite certain what does he mean to say with this statement. E Tanoihu, if he's just trying to attach a stipulation, he's really divorcing her from today, but there's a stipulation that he's attaching that the get will only be effective if he ends up passing away from the disease that he's suffering. Or does he mean that the get should only be effective after he passes away? And as we keep on repeating, a get after passing away is not effective. Aval Hocha, in the case of our Mishnah, where he writes, Mehayoyim Lachamisa, we could explain that Hocha Kamalei, what he meant to say was, Gufa, the actual property, Kari Mehayoyim, should become yours from today. The Peiri, I need, as we learned, that I need to hold on to these payers as a means of panosa, as a means of support, as long as I'm alive. And therefore, the payers should only become yours, lachamisa. But by get, there is no room for such a division. The Ritva quotes a Yerushalmi that why don't we say by get as well, that we could divide, that he wants to say that you yourself are divorced from today, but your masa yadayim, your earnings, should become mine only later, says the Ritva, quoting the Yerushalmi. That type of a statement is halachically unacceptable, because as we learned when we learned Masechta Gittin. When we learned Masechta Gittin, we learned that one of the things that disqualifies a get is of a shiur, if there's something left over in the get, if the couple is not completely separated. By him leaving, that she has to supply him with her masa yadayim, with her earnings, what that really represents, that there isn't a complete krisis, there isn't a complete separation between the husband and wife, and therefore such a get would be totally disqualified, and therefore that can't be what was meant, that can't be to what was meant with that get. So of course, Rabbi Chanan asks, with defining his statement, that when he says in our Mishnah, Mayoyim Lachamisa, that the actual property should be yours from today, and the peiros should be only lachamisa. That means he's transferring ownership of the peiros only lachamisa. But we keep on repeating in our shir, asks Rabbi Chanan, that you can't make a kinyan lachamisa. So how could that be an effective statement? It says Rabbi Chanan, what it means here is to say is that the get that the transaction be valid, mikan ulahaba ulamafreya. That when Misa comes, it won't, the payrus won't become his only at the time of death. But rather what it means is that he's getting the payrus retroactively from the time that he wrote this document. And therefore, that's a kinyan while which is taking place while he is still alive. Another way, which is sort of a Kiv Eger quotes the Beis Meir explaining that the kinyan peiros that is being referred to here is an interesting kinyan peiros. It's not that he means to say that the kinyan peiros will only kick in after he passes away. For as we're learning, a kinyan can't kick in after a person passes away. Rather, what he meant to say is that the kinyan on the peiros begin today and culminate lachamisa. So says Rabbi Kiv Eger, according to the Beis Meir, when is there a halacha of ein kinyan lachamisa? That's when the entire kinyan will only be lachamisa. But in a case where the kinyan begins from today and then continues, that is not considered you made a kinyan lachamisa. Rabbi Yosi said in the Mishnah, ain't a tzarech. It's not necessary to write mahayoyim lachamisa. Says the Gemara, Rabbi Baravu cholosh. Rabbi Baravu got ill. Val gabei Rav Huna Rav Nachman. Rav Huna Rav Nachman came to visit him. Amalei Rav Huna Rav Nachman. Boy minei, ask Rabbi Baravu halach Rabbi Yosi and halach Rabbi Yosi. Please tell us, is the halach like Rabbi Yosi or not? Amalei, to which Rav Nachman said, Tamad Rabbi Yosi lo yidana. I don't even understand the basis for Rabbi Yosi's opinion. Halachi boy minei, how could I ask if the halach is that way if I don't even understand the basis of his opinion? So Rav Huna said to Rav Nachman, At boy minei, you ask Rabbi Ravua, if the halach is like Rabbi Yosi is not. Once he'll tell you the Talmud, the reason for Rabbi Yosi, I will explain to you. So Bar Minei, so Rav Nachman asked Rabbi Avua, is the halacha like Rabbi Yosi? Amalei, and he responded, Hachyam Rav, this is what Rav taught us, that the halacha is Rabbi Yosi. Basa the Nafku. Now, when they left, Amalei, so Rav Huna says to Rav Nachman, Hainu Tam Rabbi Yosi, what is the reason for Rabbi Yosi? Am zmanish l'shtar mechich halach. The fact that there is a date in the shtar is to show that he means that it should start today. And therefore, explained the Rishonim, it will only be effective if the person who told the people to write the shtar to put in a date. Because his instruction that the date should be put into the shtar comes to show that he wants it to be effective from today. But if the people who wrote the date wrote it on their own, not based on their instructions, then of course it would not be effective. Moreover, it says the Rajba, that since Bizmanenu, everybody writes a date in a shtar, So the person who's having the shtar written knows that there's going to be a date. And it's considered that as if he gave him direction to write the date. There are other Rishonim, the Ritva, who disagrees and says, on the contrary, the fact that a date is automatically included in the shtar is an indication. The fact that a date is automatically included in the shtar doesn't mean anything. And the fact that the person who's giving the instruction knows that doesn't make a difference. And unless he explicitly said, I want you to write a date, it doesn't count. Tanya Nami Hochi, and says the Braisa supports this. Rabbi Yosi Yoyim Ein Tzorich, there's no need to write me Hayoyim. Nei Shazana Shashtar Mechichel, the date, it tells us everything. When we speak about a shtar, so a shtar could serve a number of purposes. A shtar could be a raya. It could be here to testify that whatever happened, happened. Or the shtar could serve as a shtar kinyan. As we often say, that karka, real estate, is purchased because of a shtar chazaka. These are three methods of doing a kinyan. And there's something called a shtar haknoa. So ask the Gemara, Bamnei Rav Rav Nachman, Haknoa, when we have a shtar haknoa, when we have a shtar that has a kinyan in it, mahu, do we say in that type of shtar, we still have a machlokes Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yosi, or do we say, if there is a kinyan, Rabbi Yehuda will agree that the shtar teaches us that it's effective from today. Amalei, to which Rav Nachman responded, Bakno, if we have a shtar, then that does a kinyan. Bakno, ain't tzarech, everybody will agree. When a shtar has no kinyan, ain't tzarech, everybody will agree that there is no need to write the word mehayoyim. Rav Papa says, well, it depends. Ike kenaisa, there's some shtari kinyan, the tzarech, that it's necessary to write the word hayom. Vika kenaisa, and the some shtar kinyan, the loit tzorich, where it's not necessary. If, says Rapapi, aknayo, that the shtar begins, that there was a kinyan, and then the shtar continues, the kanina mene, and then it writes again, the kanina mene, loit tzorich, it's not necessary to say mahayoyim. Because the fact that there are two kinyonim mentioned in the shtar. Why are the two kinyonim mentioned in the shtar? The second kinyon that's mentioned in the shtar is to strengthen the kinyon. What does the Gemara mean to say when it means to strengthen the kinyon? What it means to say when it says it's strengthening the kinyon, that the kinyon is already mehayoyim automatically. And therefore, if on the other hand, the wording of the shtar is kininamenei, and then it says v'aknei, so there is no reference of two kinyonim, tzorich. Then it's necessary to write the word hayoyim, because we don't have this double wording indicating that we have certainly a kinyon from today. Ask the Gemara, maskelah Rav Chanina Masura, midanam lo yudina v'safri yudina. Is there anything that we don't understand? And it's only based on the way the people who write the shtar write it. In other words, most people don't appreciate the subtle difference between if you wrote akne and kanina. And here we're saying that the people who are writing the shtar, we're saying most tamid chum aren't knowledgeable enough to understand this type of a difference. So we're saying that the cipher is not knowledgeable. And as I saw, Rabbi Aaron Leib Steinman explains the Gemara question. He says, unless we could be confident that the cipher who wrote this language wrote it based on the instruction of the person who's telling him to write the shtar, the actual writing itself cannot sufficiently serve as a proof of what was meant here. And says the Gemara, to pack up what Rav Chanina said, Shalino l'safra d'bay v'yadei, I asked the safra of Abaya that knew this difference, l'safra d'rabi d'yadei. So we see that there is that. So we see Rav Chanina is wrong. The Tzayfim do know, they understand the basis of this distinction. Says the Gemara, but now says the Gemara, Chuna Breda of Yeshuama, Bein Akne, the Kanina Mene, whether the way the Shtar was written with the word Akne and then Kanina Mene, Bein Kanina Mene, the Akne, Loi Tzarek, there's no necessity to write the word Hayoim. Or Beduchten, Pesgami, to have a Ba'anfen Peligi. The Machloik Serb Yoysi Rehuda is only when they write Duchten Pesgami, a memorial of what happened, that they aren't testifying to the Kenyan. But if they wrote a Kenyan and they wrote it a double way, no difference how it was written, that is a representation of Mihayoyim. Omer of Kahana, Amrita L'shmatza Kamedra of Zimman Adar, I said this over to Rav Zimman Adar, V'amalei Atan Hochem Esnitzinlei, this is the way you learned this discussion. However, Anan Hochem Esnitzinlei, this is the way we learned it. Omer Rav Aram Nachman, Bakno Ein Atzarech, if there's a Shtar Kinyan, there's no necessity to write Mihayoyim. Bein Akne Meknina Menei, no matter what the wording is, whether it has Akne and Kanina Menei, or whether it's written Kanina Menei, Vakne Leutzurich, in both cases, it's not necessary to say Mayoim. Only in a situation of Beduchten Pisgami, the Havim Bampona, when those words were included, then it's a Rayim. So the Paiskim discuss what is the halacha if there's a date in a shtar. So certainly we have one opinion that says that a date in a shtar doesn't really mean much because every shtar comes with a date. Other Paiskim suggest we have to see what does the date in the shtar accomplish. If the date in the shtar has an independent purpose, for example, the way I saw the Paiskim explain, if the date in the shtar is there to show that we write that something is going to be relevant at a certain time, and the date is there to show when that time will be, then that date doesn't really have much meaning. But in a case where a date has, in a case where a date is there for no other purpose, so there that we could ascertain, there we say that the date is there to prove Mehayoyim. We learned in the Mishnah, Hakos Mechasa Labana Lacham Esai. So we wrote, if somebody wrote his assets to son after he passes away, then the halach is that if the son sold those assets before the father passed away, then it's meaningless sale. So our Mishnah seems to teach us that's only as long as the father's still alive. But if the once the father passes away, the sale will be retroactively a valid sale. And that's the discussion that we begin now in our Gemara. Itma Macha Bam B'chaya Av. What's the halach of the son sold these assets while the father was alive? Or Meis HaBen B'chaya Av, and the son predeceased his father. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, even though now the father passes away, L'kana L'kayach, the buyer doesn't become the owner of those assets. Rather, the assets revert back to the Yarshim of the father. And when our Mishnah said that after the father passes away, from what our Mishnah it seems that after the father passes away, the sale does become valid, that's only if at the time of death, the son was still alive. If the time of death, the son was not alive, then the assets revert back to the father, not to the buyer. Rishlekeshamer, if the son dies before the father, then the father dies. After the father passes away, those assets do revert to the person who bought it from the son. So Taisus asks the very masker of Yochanan that we're going to learn a Gemara and Daf Kuf Lamed Tes, the Beusha Skina, that if a wife sold off Nichsim Alug, which the husband controls the payris, while the husband's still alive, and then the wife dies, that the husband takes ownership of those fields. So let's understand. The wife has Kinyan Haguf, so it seems that the wife should be compared to the son of our Mishnah. And the husband has Kinyan HaPeiris, so he's like the father. So according to Rabbi Yochanan, that if the son sold this asset, and then the son died before the father, the Lekuchas have no claim to the asset, So that's the same by a woman who's the equivalent of the son, and the husband is the equivalent of the father. So why was there a need for a special takanas usha? So Taisus answers that there are times that the husband doesn't have the peiros. For example, when they got married and she brought nechsim logan to the marriage, but the husband said, "Dinu dvarim ain li b'peirach nechesach, I don't want to have the peiros." It's not like our case where the father is eating the peiros. Another explanation is that we can't compare the husband's right to eating peiros to the father's right to eating the peiros. The husband's right to eat peiros is only a special rule midrabbanan, but that it's not to the same degree of an asset that the father owned and he retained the ownership of the peiros. That is a much stronger ownership, and therefore the two halachas cannot be compared. So explains the Gemara, this machloitis. Rabbi Yochanan lekana lekeirich, the lekeirich doesn't become an owner, because says Rabbi Yochanan, kinyan peiros ki kinyan agof. Who is considered the real owner of an asset? Is the person who owns the guf, the actual asset, or the peiros? And Rabbi Yochanan's opinion is that the father, in our example, has the kinyan of peiros, so it's considered as if he's the real owner of this asset. So what the son sold this asset while the father was alive is really not a very meaningful transaction. And therefore, if he predeceases his father, we completely ignore that sale. The Shlokish Amar, Kana Lekeach, it is considered as if the buyer had a good kinyan, even though the son died before the father, because he holds kinyan peiros lav ki kinyan aguftami. And since the father only has a kinyan peiros, that's not going to give him real ownership. And that's why the son's sale is the more significant sale. The Torah speaks about the mitzvah of hakel, that every 7 years everybody has to gather in Yerushalayim on Sukkos, and the pasuk includes the gercha shebisharecha. The gerim have to be included in the mitzvah of hakel. But the Gemara Masechta Chagiga, Daf Gimel Amud Aleph, teaches us that somebody who doesn't have to be oil regal is potter from hakel. Asks the Turi Evin, how could a ger be chayv in hakel? The Gemara Masechta Psachim, Daf Chesam Beis, teaches us that somebody who doesn't own real estate in Eretz Yisrael is not chayv in being oil regal. And a ger can't have property in Eretz Yisrael because who did he inherit from? And therefore, how he's potter from Riyah. If he's potter from Riyah, he's also potter from Hakel. So why does the Torah say the gercha asher b'sherecha? So says the Torah of him. If we say kinyan peiros ki kinyan aguf, so there we could understand a ger buys property from someone else, and even though that property will have to go back to the original owner at Yovel, till Yovel, he's going to have a kinyan peiros. And we follow the opinion of Rabbi Yochanan that kinyan peiros ki kinyan aguf. So it is considered like the ger owns property. But according to the opinion that Reish Lakish has said, that kinyan peiros lav ki kinyan aguf, so even if a ger owns property with kinyan peiros, which is what we would call a lease, he shouldn't be chayiv in oilu regel, and he shouldn't be chayiv in hakel. So the Tzlach answers, there's one way to figure it out. A ger married a Jewish woman who inherited property from a father, and then the ger, to make it a, and then she had a son, they had a son, and the son was her yairish. And then, after the son died, the son had nobody else besides the ger's father. That makes him into a yairish mederaisa. If that makes him into a yairish mederaisa, that's how he could own ger, that's how he could own property in Eretz Yisrael, and that's to whom the Torah says, the ger kashem b'sherecha. Ask the Gemara, this machlokes that we just learned of Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish about kinyan and peiros kinyan aguf, ask the Gemara, the fligaboy chadazimna is mentioned elsewhere. We know that every year a person has to bring bikurim, and when we bring the bikurim, we have to read the parshas bikurim. And the halacha is that asheba artzcha, that the person brings bikurim, has kris bikurim on property that grew on his land. Itmar, hamoich sadeh l'peiris, if somebody sold off his sadeh for peiris, Rabbi Yochanan says, but he kept the ownership on the property. Rabbi Yochanan may be the kaira because he's considered the true owner of the property, because kinyan peiris ki kinyan aguf. Shlokish amar may be any kaira because since he only has a kinyan peiris, he's not considered the real owner. Rabbi Yochanan amar may be kaira because sov kinyan peiris ki kinyan aguf dami. Shlokish amar may be any kaira kinyan peiris lav ki kinyan aguf dami. So ask the Gemara, why was it necessary to say this machloikus twice? Answers the Gemara. Amalach Rabbi Yochanan, says Rabbi Yochanan, indeed, Avgad the Alma, even though under normal circumstances, it is my opinion that Kinyan Peres ki Kinyan Aguft on me, Hachi Itzrich. We need to learn this halacha again here. Ksakadat Chamina. We would think that the father is giving over the guf of this property to the son. And even though the father is retaining the Peres, but we would maybe assume that Abba Lagab Berei, a father, to as far as his son is concerned, is a chuli achli. He really wants to give primary ownership to his son, and therefore that we don't say here that the kinyan peiros that the father has should be considered kinyan aguf. Kamash malon that we do. We have to learn this halacha here again. When it's him and his son, and yes, a father, as Rabbi Yochanan just taught us, has tremendous love and affection to his son, but he loves himself more. Nafshe difle, and maybe over here we should say that the kinyan peiros is considered like kinyan aguf, teaches us, Rav Shlokish, that I'm consistent with my opinion that kinyan peiros is like kinyan aguf. So of course the Rishonim ask, so we can understand why the halacha stated by Bikurim is insufficient to teach us what the halacha is here. But the question is, why was it necessary to say the halacha by Bikurim? We should only say this halacha here, and once we learn the halacha here, we'll be able to understand the halacha by Bikurim. Explain the Rashbam, that doesn't travel together, because we have to mention it in both cases. Because by, as we said, Rabbi Yochanan says, by his son he's completely meichel. By Bikurim he's not completely meichel. And therefore, we have to say that in all cases, they're consistent with their opinion. Eser Rabbi Yochanan and Shlokish. So we have this machloikus, and Rabbi Yochanan's opinion is that kinyan peiros is kinyan aguf dami. Ask the Gemara, Eser Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish, somebody said, Nechase lach, we speak about this often, that I'm giving you my assets, Vachrechan, after you pass away, not your Yorishim should get it, Yiresh Ployni, another person should get these assets, not your Yorishim, and then when that second person passes away, Yiresh Ployni, Achrav Yiresh Ployni, Shmeis Rishin, so when the first person passes away, Konashaini, Mei Sheini, Konashlishi. However, says the Brisa, Mei Sheini Berishin, Bechai Rishin, if the second person passed away before the first person, Yachzrin Chosim LeYarshe Rishin. Because how did he make his statement? It should go from 1 to 2, from 2 to 3. If it's not going to go from 1 to 2, because the 2 is not alive, then it doesn't revert to 3. Rather, it reverts to the Yorshim of number 1. Makes Rabbi Yochanan's point. Vim Isa. If we're going to say the Kinyan Peres Lavka Kinyan Guf, like Rish Lakish says, the Yorshim Naisim Abayalei. So, yes, it can't go from 1 to 2, because 2 is no longer here, but 1 only has a Kinyan Peres. He doesn't have full-fledged ownership in this property. Why doesn't he have full-fledged ownership in this property? Because the person who gave the property said that he could only have it as long as he's alive and not afterwards. That's called a kinyan peiros. So yes, as we keep on repeating, it doesn't go to number 2 because he's not alive anymore. But why does it remain with him? It should go back to the original owner who has the kinyan haguf, and Rav Shlokish's opinion is that the one who has the kinyan haguf, the one who has the kinyan haguf, is the real owner, and therefore it should go back to him. Says the Gemara, Amalei, Rav Shlokish responds to Rav Yochanan, this case that you just mentioned has nothing to do with what we're speaking about. This is not a regular Kenyan payrus. Yes, you could have a situation that we're discussing actually in our shir. A Kenyan payrus, the father only has a Kenyan payrus. And now we have a question. Is Kenyan payrus Kenyan aguf? Is Kenyan payrus lafke Kenyan aguf? Achrecha is not an example of Kenyan payrus. Achrecha, when I give something to someone, and then I say, after you pass away, it should go to someone else. As long as he's alive, it's completely his. It's not just a Kenyan payrus. And says the Gemara, the Kain Rami, the simile this question was asked, Rabbi Bar Afuna Kameh the Rav, asked the same question. And he also said, Achrecha Shani, it doesn't represent an example of Kenyan payrus.